This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
I will return to those texts a little bit later on, but there's no reason on God's earth we would ever slow down Joanna Fortune answering your questions. So I'm not going to do it today under no circumstances. Lovely to see you, Gwen.
And you too, Joanna. Tom.
Yeah. Loads of questions, yeah. and you're going to have your work cut out to you with some of these.
There's some great ones in here.
The first, near and dear to my heart, although it must be probably 14 years since I've used your rewards chart, but I remember them fondly. A listener says, we're having some behavioural issues with our five-year-old, the usual things such as hitting, kicking, pinching. Her younger brother gets the blunt of it. Our neighbour, who has similarly aged kids, suggested we use a rewards chart. My parenting book advises against these because it says it forces the child into the idea that good behaviour equals treats and privileges. But my neighbour says it has worked wonders. Should we try it, or are behavioural charts best avoided?
I mean, I'm not a huge advocate of them. Because it's, look, and I'm not demonizing them, Tom, either, because like, look, they're working for your neighbor. They work for some kids. They're not a universal fix. It depends on the child you have. If your child is more sensitive, they can experience that kind of behavior chart as quite shaming because it's hanging up there for the world to see that somebody's up to something or doing something or failing at something. And there, it is making that association between if something is worth doing, it's worth doing for the reward rather than the activity itself. So I'm not, and also I think behavior charts are very much part of a behavior modification approach. You're just looking at the behavior that's problematic and you're looking to change that behavior. I tend to approach challenging behavior in a different way, that it's not a child being difficult, but more a sign that a child is having a difficulty. So the behavior that you see on the outside, whatever they're doing or saying, is not the problem per se. It is an expression of an underlying problem. And unless you get to what's underpinning that behavior, you'll solve one behavior with your sticker chart, and then you'll have a sticker chart for a new behavior and a sticker chart for a new behavior. And you'll end up playing symptom whack-a-mole. Just you'll solve one behavior and up will pop another. I think get curious about what is going on for this little guy. So if he's doing the, and I love this line, he's doing the usual things, you know.
Yeah.
So if it's usual, when did it start, you know? And what are his stimulation levels? I'm thinking he's five. He's either going into junior infants or has just finished junior infants. You know, you're talking around that stage. So you're thinking in school, if it's the, he hasn't transitioned into big school yet, is there enough stimulation in his preschool environment at this stage for him? If he's just come out of junior infants, the summer is a tricky time because they've had this very structured day. There's a lot of mini transitions, very clear expectations. We do this, then this, then this, then this. You go out, you come in. It's all very structured. The summer is not. So you could be getting a behavioral reaction to a change in schedule. Sure. I'd watch the stimulation levels. We're having the most beautiful weather, but lots of outdoor play, lots of physical activity. And I would look at increasing his levels of play just to try and get lots of that energy. Sure. He's clearly holding on to, burnt off, processed, worked out. I know the younger brother is getting the brunt of it. I was curious how old the younger brother might be. Is that somebody within developmental swing, or are these two kids, one is very young, one's five, and they just can't quite play together because they're not into the same things at this point of their development? So just keep an eye on that. I would really be following, though, when did it start? And can you, whenever you look at when it started, go back a few weeks before that and just track what was going on, what has changed, and think about it, Tom, from the point of view of what has changed from the perspective of a five-year-old, not from our adult perspective, because we might dismiss or gosh, look, that was no big deal, but it might be a big deal for him.
Sure.
I'd try and get what is underpinning the behaviour rather than focusing on the behaviour itself.
Very good. Right, this is quite a heavy one for you now. How I bond with my sick baby. I have an 18-month-old baby who has been extremely sick since she's been 4 months old. She's been in and out of hospital for the last year and has numerous MRIs and general anaesthetics for various things. Lately, I feel quite disconnected from her. On the occasions that she's let out of hospital, she doesn't like to cuddle into me or kiss, and she's not very affectionate. I assume this is because when she's in hospital, she's in a cot away from me and hooked up to various machines. I don't want this awful ordeal to affect our bond on top of everything else. How can I protect our bond and bring us closer
together? Isn't that just so difficult?
Very tough.
It's just so, so difficult. And I think that piece of, I feel quite disconnected from her, I bet, you know, and the idea that this baby isn't affectionate because they don't want to cuddle in or kiss. It's really complicated because that's a very young child. And from even most of their life, when you're in hospital and you're receiving, especially hooked up to machines, this is a serious illness, clearly. But what you're looking at is the type of touch a baby's getting is very functional. It's medical. And the body can encode that touch as painful and something that isn't nice. It's not soothing. It's not regulating. It's something that I'm kind of prepared to go, ooh, I don't like it. So that it would correlate with the child going, I don't really want to be cuddled or squeezed or touched because I don't enjoy that. So you're trying to give a different experience of touch that is soothing and nurturing so that this little one can have that experience of it can be nice to be touched. But how you might do that is through play. And I'm thinking of, you know, just getting a cotton ball and just stroking up and down her arm, using the kind of not light cotton ball touch because that can be quite tickly and stimulating, not digging in so deep that it's sore, but just that mid pressure so that she really feels it and you're just going up and down. Equally, you could get a clean, like a makeup brush, like a blusher brush, and stroke up and down so you're not touching skin to skin because that might be something she's not ready for, but you are giving soothing, regulating touch. I'm thinking as well, now it might be tricky in hospital, but at home, especially at this age, blow bubbles and let them pop over her, near her. And just, that's such a lovely little experience. It's very playful. This age group responds and you're just having fun together. Don't be worried about cuddle in and kiss and hold. Get some play, some laughter, because what you get there are moments of meeting, which is that opportunity for true connection. I'm thinking of singing stories. You can also do this when she is in a cot, God love her, separated from you in hospital. You can sit, you don't have to be good at singing, 18 month olds don't care, but singing stories, finger puppets, you know, so that you can play out little stories in front of her and she can watch and see that. If touch or massage is an option, explore it, like I said, with the brush or the cotton ball. It can be a great way to offer positive touch and remap some of that. But I think on top of this, because it's really difficult, I would say connect with Children in Hospital Ireland as an organisation. They're a wonderful resource. They can offer you all kinds of insights and guidance about what to do when your child is sick. But they may, and ask in the hospital as well, and Children in Hospital Ireland might be able to assist with this, about connecting with a hospital play specialist. Like, now they're a valuable resource and I'd love hospitals, I'm sure they would too, to have more of them, but they may have play volunteers, play specialists that can come with you and talk about how you can play with your sick child in a safe way for them, but that does drive connection. But more than that, and it may be on top of all of that, as a parent, just hold in mind, this is also happening to you. It's not just happening to your baby.
Very tough.
Oh, it's very tough. And since this baby was 4 months old, so the whole relationship
is... It should be all about magical days.
Exactly. And the fear that comes with this and that heightened state of arousal and hypervigilance that comes with parenting a sick child. So I would strongly encourage this parent to connect with a therapist for themselves. Sure. Many of the maternity hospitals can offer perinatal services, you know, when there's anything affecting your mental health that is in any way connected to your baby or your child or pregnancy afterwards, you know, for up to 2 years. So it might be worth reaching out and connecting and saying, is that something you could connect in with somebody who is a perinatal specialist? You're still in that time. But if not, you know, connecting through your GP for a referral or somebody who is a registered certified accredited psychologist or psychotherapist, I think it would be an investment in your child and your relationship with your child to take care of how this is impacting on you. And of course it is. This is really hard.
Yeah, it's tough going. Onwards with quite a difference now. Baby Chinos before a camp.
I know them well.
Yes, I remember them.
I know them well.
At one point, they seemed like the greatest invention ever. Right, I have an 8-year-old daughter who is in summer camp for the next few weeks. She doesn't really want to go, but she has no choice as her mother and I are working. This week is the first week that I've been dropping her, but she's kicked up a fuss when I wouldn't bring her for a baby chino before the camp. Apparently, her mother has been bringing her for baby coffees every morning. I'm furious because I don't think we should have to bribe to attend a fun summer camp and that many of her friends are in. What do you think of this daily habit? Aside from the cost, I think it sets a precedent. Any advice?
Now, I would look at this quite differently. This is one of those moments where I'm like, pick your battles. Is this really something you're going to go to battle over? A baby chino, for anyone who hasn't had the joy, is a cup of warm milk.
Yep.
Sometimes there's marshmallows involved. Sometimes there's a dusting of chocolate powder on the top, but it's a cup of warm milk. And I think there is that little bit of bonding that this is talking about here. This is about having that moment in the car on her way to camp, sharing that little coffee in inverted commas experience, having a chat. It's nurturing.
It's kind of playing, isn't it, really?
It's playful. And it just is something that helps her. No more than a cup of coffee helps most of us ease into our day. It's just something helping her. And I know the summer camp thing is coming up every week at the moment because everybody's having the highs and lows with them. But I know, and I hear this parent saying, look, it's a fun summer camp. She should be having fun. She doesn't want to go. She's not up for it. And we need her to go because you work and it's also filling a childcare gap for you. So I think you've got to meet her some way going, you can't say it will be fun. You must have fun. Maybe it's about looking at how do we make this more fun and how do you co-regulate her and connect with her? I'd say, and I have a child similar age to this and a baby chino in the car blaring K-pop music on your way to something is a small hit for big gains.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So I would look at this in a different way. The summer juggle, there are many battles that are going to come up. This is not one that I would take on.
Right. I'm a bit struck by I'm furious. That seems like a bit...
It is a big reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a bit like, you know, I think, look, if the daily habit is costly, we're talking about the adult coffee alongside it. Now, it depends. The cost of a baby chino will vary place to place. So I don't want to say how much it is, but you're talking 1 to 2 euros for a baby chino. And there are worse things she could be drinking. It is a cup of milk. But I would, like, if this is the thing that's infuriating you, I would be saying everything else must be going pretty well.
Yeah. Give the child the baby chino.
I just would be my advice.
Onwards, this is a long one and it's heavy enough. Yeah. A lot going on here. I'm looking for some guidance on a situation with my own mother. I'm a mother of 3 children, 6, 8 and 10 years old, 2 of whom have additional needs. I'm separated from their father for a couple of years after a very difficult relationship. The separation wasn't amicable and last year I had to obtain a protection order. It has been an incredibly stressful and isolating time. When we first separated, I didn't tell my parents because I feared they wouldn't support my decision. My ex eventually told them. Since then, neither of my parents has ever asked how I am or acknowledged the separation. I've reached out several times looking for support, but they've made it clear they only want to have a relationship with my children, not with me. My mother visits every couple of weeks to see the children. Thankfully, they enjoy seeing her, although she doesn't always understand or accommodate their additional needs in the way I do. As they've grown older, they've adapted some way to her way of doing things, and these visits generally go well. The difficulty is that I find her visits very emotionally draining. She barely speaks to me, and because of that, I've started leaving the house while she's there and only returning as she's about to leave. I find it heartbreaking that, as her daughter, I've received so little emotional support during one of the most difficult periods of my life. Recently, she wanted to visit on days that don't work for me because of appointments. I've explained this, but she's unwilling to change her plans. For example, if she's coming up, she won't stay an extra half an hour or come a half an hour later to facilitate an appointment. This means I'm often stuck and it's hard to find cover for a babysitter for just half an hour. This also upsets the kids. Having somebody else come over, it might be easier to just pay a sitter for the entire higher hours that I need cover for. I'm struggling with whatever I should continue, whether I should continue facilitating these visits because they benefit the children, even though they come at a significant emotional cost to me and offer no practical support. I'm also wondering whether I'm holding on to a relationship she has with the kids that may not last anyway, given that my parents seem to have distanced themselves from me because of my separation. How do I know when preserving a grandparent relationship is in my children's best interests? When is it okay to put my own well-being first? Is it reasonable to set firmer boundaries, even if that means my children see their grandmother less often?
Yes, it is. And I think it's more than reasonable. It's important. Do you know, there's so much in this and there, you know, there's layers in this letter here. But I think when going through such a difficult relationship ending, and any relationship ending is difficult, but this one clearly had more complexity involved because of protection orders and everything else that were involved in doing so, that you were fearful of telling your parents. So there's a part of this that says you were anticipating with a degree of certainty, they're not going to support me on this. That speaks to the nature or the conditionality of that relationship. And, you know, it's important for anyone listening as well to note that when a parent punishes their child with silence or by withdrawing the connection or withholding connection, emotional support and, of course, communication as part of that, that's an emotionally abusive relationship. And that's very, very damaging in terms of causing anxiety, internalized shame, that you're a bad person, not deserving of love and care. It impacts emotional development. And I don't think that just stops when you're a child. That lingers into adulthood. And the relationship as an adult child of aging parents is a complex one to negotiate at times anyway. But also when they're still punishing you, like you've done something wrong and that you need their approval, you're an adult. You know, that's something in this relationship has not grown up, and that lingering shame piece, how much of this letter is this parent appeasing and placating their mother and saying, oh, you come when it suits you and it doesn't suit me, but oh gosh, now I have to get a half hour babysitter to facilitate you. No, you don't. You don't have to do that. And I think above anything else, protect your peace. It's hard earned by the sounds of this letter. So protect your peace. The visits that are happening, and I am a big advocate of the grandparent-grandchild relationship. I think it offers a huge amount of benefits for both. But these visits are for your mother's benefit. They're not for yours. Yes, the children, I hear that, enjoy seeing her. But the boundary is that she cannot come into your home and treat you badly in front of your children. You have to monitor your children's perceptions of how their grandmother is disrespecting you, because children are smart and they're observers and they are watching that, and it must be confusing for them because they're certainly not allowed to disrespect you. And they've also come through a hard time with their parents' relationship breaking down. It's not okay for her to behave like that. I also hear, though, this parent, and I respect that, saying, look, I do want my children to have a relationship with their grandmother. Certainly she can see her grandchildren, but how about a neutral space at a time that suits both of you?
Right. Or,
and if it doesn't, it doesn't happen. So you're not saying, no contact, I don't want you to see my children. You're structuring it. And structure is about boundaries. It's flexible, it's adaptable, it does suit, it doesn't. How about we do this? Oh, well, if it doesn't suit you, oh, well, next time. But you're trying to put some boundaries there. I also think, and I would emphasize with this one, Tom, this parent deserves personal therapy. There is a whole lot. They have extricated themselves from two difficult relationships, the marital one and the parental one. They are dealing with a huge amount that needs to be processed and worked through. And the best investment any of us will do for our children is to take care of ourselves. And I think when you start overtly valuing and respecting yourself and modeling those boundaries, you're setting an expectation for how others should also treat you, including your mother. So it's okay that they're upset about your relationship breakdown. What's not okay is that they're treating you with disrespect and that they're acting like this is something you've done to them. Mm-hmm. This is absolutely not something you've done to them. You are deserving of support. If they are not able or willing to give it, then you have to rethink the boundaries of that relationship to protect your own peace.
Fascinating, Joanna, is all I can say to that. I was surprised how strong you were in with the rest, with the yes. But as you went in, I could see how important those boundaries were. And
it's about safety.
That withdrawing your kind of, you know, your own warmth as a form of punishment.
It's so abusive to do that, and so damaging for somebody's mental health and
well-being.
Somebody
deserving of you know.
Absolutely. Self-care.
Brilliant. Joanna, thank you very
Thanks,
much as
Tom.
Always.
Great to see you.
53106 for your text, or if you have a problem, I think it's still emails to Moncrief or
afternoon@newstalk.com.
That's the one.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.